Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is musician and filmmaker Daniel Carlson, and we're going to be talking about his new album, Cartoon Babylon. Daniel, welcome back to the show. It's a real pleasure to talk to you again.
Thanks so much, Mark. It's a thrill to be here.
Now, we're going to talk about the new album, Cartoon Babylon, but as I went to your website, you seem to be doing 900 projects simultaneously all the time.
You get your
fingers in a lot of pies.
I like to keep busy. My wife, who is a painter, Julia Jacquette, who I think you've spoken
to. I've interviewed her, yeah.
Yeah, she's always been an inspiration. She works very hard. She introduced me to the Chuck Close quote about, I'll paraphrase, but inspiration is for amateurs. I get to work. So I try to keep busy and, we were talking briefly before we started about technology and how technology has evolved and made a lot of these tasks a lot easier. And so being able to make records at home or videos or all this stuff, really just by yourself, that's helped me to really have my hands on a lot of things.
And it's really spawned thousands of independent musicians and auditory artists to be able to use this new technology on your own and not have to be, hope to suck up to some record company or something like that. It's really changed the entire field. Let's talk about Cartoon Babylon first, because I want to make sure we talk about this. You rounded up an amazing group of musicians besides yourself, okay? Let's talk about them, because I was sort of surprised you had these.
Yeah,
no offense, I didn't mean that in a negative way. But
not at all. I didn't take it that way. I mean, I'll go backwards and say that, and I said this to all of them, as I was finishing up the record and listening over and over again to their contributions, I was floored every time. They're such incredible players. But Chris Bruce is a fantastic guitar player who has played with so many different people. I mean, he was with Wendy and Lisa first, and then Seal and Sheryl Crow and all sorts of people. But his longest tenure has been with Michelle and Dickie Ocello. And Chris is somebody I went to high school with, so we've known each other forever.
How did you meet Michelle? I know Michelle's work, and that's like a major league player there.
Yeah, so Chris had been playing with Michelle for years. And
oh, wow.
Chris he's not a person who sort of is a schmoozer or, we were never invited backstage to shows, and that's just because of who he is. He's one of my closest friends, but at one point, Michelle heard one of my records and told Chris, "Hey, I want to meet this person." And she also said Julia's work, and so we went backstage at a show of Michelle's. I think she was doing her James Baldwin project. I'm not sure what it was, but it was a fantastic show. I was a huge fan of her work, and she was immediately warm. And we got to be, I'll say, friendly, if not friends, although I call her friends. And I did some video work for her. So with a collaborator of mine, Kathleen Owens, we did some music videos for her. I did some more video projects. And a couple of years ago, she sent a note, she sent a text. She said, I think it'd be really good for me to play on one of your records. I think that would be something I'd really enjoy doing.
Wow.
And so, yeah, wow, it was what I said, too. And so I sent her a very early version of the record, and she picked a couple of songs and, in pretty short order, sent me these tracks. And, listening to them here in the living room with Julia, I was just completely blown away by her playing. She is, she's one of the all-time great bass players. And she only plays on something. She chose songs where she had some ideas, and those ideas were brilliant. And I never would have come up with those parts.
This is the way people who are listening who don't understand how musicians work now. This is like this is so exciting. So she's listened to one set of tracks. She adds her input, and now you've got a whole different song.
Absolutely, and that's exactly what happened. Her playing transformed those two songs, and I'll give you just one other lens on this, which is that Chris has been in Michelle's band for a long time. The keyboard player is playing on this, Jebin Bruni, another brilliant player. He has been with Michelle a long time. And the drummer, Earl Harvin, who, again, played with so many people. He plays with Air. He's played with Air, and he's been with Tindersticks, a wonderful band, for many years. They have all played together on occasion, Michelle and Earl and Jebin and Chris. So a number of years ago, I saw them play in Germany, and I remember watching this group, this very group of musicians, and thinking, what an amazing thing they had going. It almost felt like chamber music in a way, where you could hear everybody's contributions, even in a live setting. And, you know, you've heard live music a million times, I know, and you know how rare that is, right? It's usually just a sort of wall of sound, or very often it is. And so for me to then, on a couple of tunes on the record, have that very band playing my material and was a real thrill. And so it was something I'd thought about before. I certainly didn't, that wasn't my goal to have that group of musicians, but that's how it worked out.
How long did it take you to mix the whole thing?
So the recording took place over, you know, many months separately.
So is this really, is this a COVID project?
This is a COVID project. Songs were written before COVID, and then everybody sent in their contributions. Aside from the very beginnings of it, the rhythm tracks with Earl Harvin, the drum stuff, was done in person in December of 2019. So we thought we were going to have a record with real people and playing together, but COVID happened, and so.
But it's amazing because that actually allowed you the time and space to produce a totally different project, probably.
Absolutely. And, the only challenge, as I'm sure you can imagine, is how you keep that from sounding like something where stuff has been phoned in.
That's right.
And
you can't tell that in this recording at all.
Well, thanks. I won't say a lot about the recording, in terms of subjective stuff, but I do think that is the case. I do think it sounds like people playing in a room together, and that's all down to them.
We're going to repeat this at the end of this, but if people want to access and buy this music, where can they do it?
So it's coming out in about 3 weeks, and they can go to my page where there's a link, which is danielcarlson.com. They can also go to Bandcamp and look me up there, which is bandcamp.com and Daniel Carlson, and there are a bunch of records. It's going to be available on download, and also we are doing vinyl this time and have a really nice mastering and did 180-gram vinyl, and they sound great. The records sound great.
Now, with people who are tuning in to this, the intro and outro I played yesterday, you said tomorrow. How would you describe your music to somebody who'd never heard it before?
So
I know that's tough.
It's tough. I should have better answers. I think for me, it's easier to talk about who I listen to, and I think that
okay.
I'll take that. Points to it. You know, I was a Beatles person. I was a mid-period Beach Boys person, and then I listened to a lot of Elvis Costello too, and Burt Bacharach, and I grew up with Carpenter's records, and I grew up with Soul records and Curtis Mayfield records. So later I discovered these sort of funny chamber pop records of the 60s bands like the Left Banc. So I would tell people
Old enough I remember the Left Banc very well.
From the first, really?
Yeah.
I'm impressed.
I'm older than you.
Melody and rhythm is at the core of what I do.
There's a real intimacy to every single song, though. It's interesting. It's like it's perfect music to put on your headphones. And I really like that sort of intimate contact with the artists.
I appreciate that. I wonder a lot. So this record, because I made most of it at home, was largely made on headphones. And one thing I've thought about, I wonder if you've talked to other musicians about this, is, the environment one makes a record in has a real effect on the listening experience. Yeah. So this is a record, as I said, that was made on headphones. I heard it that way. To be really honest with you, when I hear it through speakers, I don't want to say it's jarring, but it sounds very, very different to me. And that's not about mixing choices or, you know, but we're talking about mixing, we're talking about adjusting the levels of things and effects. It's not about that. It's about the way you hear things. And when you listen to things on headphones, you hear them very close up. It is very intimate. And so I wonder if that's part of it. One of the other things that I've thought about a lot and talked with some musician friends as I've worked through this record is the relationship you have with a record as you're making it, and how during that time, before you've shared it with people, what a personal and private thing it is. So I don't play things for anybody.
That explains it, because I think that comes through on this record.
Yeah, well, thanks. I mean, so I think about that a lot. And, you know, I know there are people who, as they're working on records, share things with people. Hey, check this out. And I don't do that. And you've got me thinking about whether that, you know, impacts it, which
well,
I think it does.
Well, you know, it's interesting. When you put together this album, were these just the number of songs and you finally said, well, I've got enough to put out an album? Or did you make songs for an album?
So as soon as the last album was done,
you're talking about Rainy Day People?
We did Cloudy People.
Cloudy People, excuse me.
Right, which was on, I think that album was called Not a Drawing. I don't always remember. I always try to get things started before something is done. So I hate to have a totally empty canvas, right? So those songs started, I think, in 2017, and I think I wrote 10 or 11 songs with the idea that they would be this record, and it got pretty clear that these were the ones that worked together. There was one that cut almost all the way and just didn't make the cut. It didn't feel like it fit. So
I'm always fascinated by how artists work. So talk to me about your songwriting process.
Yeah, so it's varied over the years, and I think about this too. There was a book by Paul Zollo, a book of interviews of songwriters called Songwriters on Songwriting. And he interviews a bunch of people. And one of the ones that really stuck with me was with Randy Newman.
Huh.
And Randy Newman, I think Paul Zollo says, you know, I'm talking with a lot of people and they dream songs and they, you know, in the morning they're song. And Randy Newman said, I have no idea what they're talking about. I sit down and I write a song, and it's really hard work to do that.
That's right. You just bang it out and struggle with it.
Yeah, until you get something. And some days, you know, as I said, Julie's been a big influence, my wife. So I sit down, you know, and I work. It's rare that I'm walking on the street and a song comes into my head. So in answer to your question.
That answered it.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'll say one more thing about it, which is that there are all sorts of strategies. Some of these songs were written to a drum machine part. You know, they get you in a mood. They get you in a certain tempo. So there are different strategies, but that's how I work.
Do you set apart a certain time or hours in the day to songwrite? Like, do you make yourself sit down to songwrite?
Yes. I do, but not. It's not all year round. So we live in Amsterdam in the summers, and during the summers is when I sit down, and every morning I work.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, people who are not familiar with contemporary recording and contemporary music being distributed, the challenge is always getting this music out to people and getting people to know that the music is there. How do you go about that?
Yeah, so that's a really great question, and it's one I've been thinking about a lot lately, because it's easy to get your music out to the people who know you already.
Yeah, but you want to get the new people.
You want to get the new people, and how, especially if you're doing something, you know, I'm not making pop records for 20-year-olds or 25-year-olds or 30-year-olds. What I'm doing is not something you're going to find, you know, and this is true of so many people now, you're not going to find this on, I was going to say MTV, but that dates me, you know what I'm saying?
Right? It really did.
Yeah, I know. I don't even know what to say, because you can't even say on the radio. I mean,
well, the radio, even satellite radio, is so fractured now that it's like the Elvis channel.
Right, exactly. And
so the room for original music being aired is very, very small and tiny.
It is, and so you know, there's some people who. There's a DJ, Sue Braun, on WFMU, which is a great station. She plays my stuff. You know, I get played on BBC Six every once in a while. But the answer to your question is, you know, how do you find the people for whom this is meaningful? I don't really have an answer to that. I'm still working at it, and I will tell you that I send my stuff or reach out to anybody who I think has even a glancing interest in the kind of music I'm making, the sort of melodic,
right,
pop. We're going to, you know, we'll call it pop. People have used the word sort of
I would never use the term pop for your music.
Say this again?
I never would use the term pop for your music.
I wouldn't have either. A few people, there's a French writer recently who called it pop, and I understand that it, I mean, I understand that it means different things to different people.
Yeah, I think the French concept of pop is very different.
It's right, because you're coming from Serge Gainsbourg and all that stuff.
Yeah, the Yeah Yeah Girls and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So that's like a whole different shtick.
It's true. It's very true.
But it's funny, because I see musicians like yourself now. Like, I have a lot of friends who are painters, and you're sort of working the same way. You're doing huge bodies of work, and the challenge is always to get people to see it or get people to hear it, and it's the same kind of challenge.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it leads to this larger sort of question about, I was just talking with a publicist about this, about asking yourself the question of, you know, why are you doing the things that you're doing? Why am I doing
it? Well, why are you doing it?
Well, I do this, I would say, I'll say this and I'll back off. I have to do this. I don't have to do this. But it is such a core of who I am to use these skills and to craft these songs. It's very important to me to do it.
That's sounding very much like when you ask painters that same question.
Yeah.
They're compelled.
Right.
That's the thing, that you get something internal out of doing this. That's the artistic expression that makes your life swing, you know.
Absolutely.
I find that so interesting that now painters and musicians like yourself, I mean, take the commercial stuff out of the way, and it's, you're working very much on the same. It's like almost now we need galleries for music. Where there should be like a station that's like a gallery that plays, that shows different musicians and stuff like that. That'd be great.
It's a great idea. I mean, one thing that occurs to me as you're saying that is something you were referring to earlier. And I wonder if the working methods have changed so much for musicians, meaning the way we work now is so much more like painters work.
That's right. That's the whole way that you described you were working.
Yeah.
That's exactly the way painters work. You're no longer going into the big buck studio. You know, you're not just hoping for studio time. You've subverted that. Your home is your studio.
Yeah, I think that's true.
And I find that interesting. The problem is that there's a lot of interesting music out there, and you want to be able to know where they are. And that's why I love talking to people like yourself. That hopefully people listening to this show will go to your website and then listen to the music and enjoy it.
I hope so. I hope they do. Listen, check it out.
There's a lot of stuff there, too. I want to mention, there's also a great animation of you, the sort of weird overlaid line drawings of you.
Oh, for the, it's for one of the songs Michelle plays on.
Yeah, yeah.
For Light Lab, yeah. So
I love the way that looked.
Thank you. So that was new music video for one of the songs off of Cartoon Babylon. Again, Michelle plays on that one, Michelle and Dago Cello. And so one of my other parts of my life is that I make videos and photos. I teach filmmaking. And so that can be a challenge, making video content for your own work. But that was just a fun way to spend an afternoon, and it ended up being way more complicated to make, but I'm happy with it. It is worth taking a look, I think. Thanks for mentioning it.
Now, I have to mention, I have to pay attention to other projects that you do. As your friend Jimmy said, you had a couple of EPs released only in Italy. How does that happen?
So this is 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I was in a cafe in Stockholm. I was on holiday, and I got to talking with somebody. It's a very long story, but the short version is that connected me to this Swedish musician. It was just a bizarre nothing, and he heard my records, and he sent me an email, again, 10 years ago. He said, I love your voice. Let's do something together sometime. And I just said, sure, that's fine. So 5 years after that, I get another email, and he said, his name is Andy Sandy, and he said, I'm ready. and here are the tracks. And he sent me these great Swedish, well, he's Swedish, but these synth pop tracks, hearkening back very much to the 80s. Not my genre, not what I normally do, but I love the challenge. And we made these two records, and he had a connection with a small label in Italy. They came out on white vinyl, and I think they're really great. I will, you know, they're not really my creation. They're his creation, so well worth checking out. They're called Iso Omena, Isoomena, which I think means Big Apple in either Finnish or Swedish, and just a very different trip. there's a really nice piece. Rick Moody ended up writing a really nice article about those on his blog. So there's a nice interview that revolves around it too. But that was a really, really fun project.
Can we access them here?
They're on Spotify.
Okay, so it's under the name Iso Omena.
Yeah. And one is called, there's also a terrific video for a song called The Prisoner, and that's on YouTube. But Iso Omena is definitely.
Is that a reference to the British TV show?
I don't. You know what? I don't think it is, actually. Okay. I never asked him. We've never met. We've only met.
I love this.
Not only never met, we've never spoken. It's only been by email. We haven't Zoomed or anything. So it'll happen.
So this all brings up another question. Do you ever play out?
Rarely. I sort of made up my goal to do that more, and then the pandemic happened. But it was never something I was very comfortable with doing, but I've got more comfortable with it. I did a house concert in Paris, I think, in 19, right before right before all this happened, and I loved it. I had a great time. I met a bunch of super interesting French musicians, and I'll do more of it once things lift.
Is there more of this going on in Europe than there is in America?
Are we talking about music like this?
Like independent music being distributed independently.
So I'm not sure about Europe in general, but I will tell you that my very small experience of meeting these French musicians, in a very short period of time, I met three or four people who were doing a version of what I do.
Huh.
And who are, I don't want to say having some success, but they're getting word out there and they're getting written about and they're getting gigs. And some of them have had actually quite a bit of success. So I do think whether it's because the sort of world is smaller there, you know, the population smaller, or whether there's a different sensibility when it comes to the music. But yes, I think something else is going on there, definitely in France. I don't feel it as much in the Netherlands when we're there. So it may be country to country, but I just think the States is so big, you know, it's really hard to make an impression unless you're willing to
Also, the audiences are regionally fractured.
Yeah.
So it's really tough to get play, I'm sure, in the Midwest or even on the West Coast.
I agree. I agree. I don't even know how to approach that.
Yeah, no, I interview a lot of poets, and they're all regional scenes. So there's like the Pacific Northwest poets and the LA-centered poets, and then there's like the Northeastern poets. And it's weird. There's no big event that sort of brings them together.
That's fascinating. There's no South by Southwest for poets.
You know, or musicians like yourself. I mean.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, South by Southwest now has become such a thing that if you're playing there, you don't have to worry about anything. I mean, you're known.
Yeah, you're on a label.
Like. And you've never gone that route, have you?
No.
And you've never tried it?
You mean play down there? Or
no, try to go the commercial route.
No, I mean, I had a relationship with a lovely label in the UK, a very small label called Folkwit for many years, and they've stopped doing their thing. But you know, I just didn't ever feel like there was a place for me there. To be honest with you, I think that world is really for much younger people and much more commercial people, and that has just not been what I've done. I wouldn't have turned it down, but it just never felt like there was a.
Yeah, it seems to be all wrapped up in image now.
Yep.
Like, yeah, and if you don't have the image, don't bother. You know,
it's true. I mean, I've been reading the Neil Young book Shaky, which I wonder if you've read.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's, of course, talking about a time in the early 70s, and I think Randy Newman is quoted in there, and he's quoted as saying, yeah, it was a time when you could be ugly and still get a record deal. And that's, you know, I'm not saying he's ugly, but I'm just saying, yeah, image was different there.
The amazing thing is, I think it's ageism, too. I think you have to be really, really young.
Yep.
And I look at a lot of the artists that my granddaughters are listening to, and I just look at it, and I hate to sound like, you know, the old guy, get off my lawn, kids. But I just sort of see it as such commercial, like, stuff.
Yeah.
And granted, you can dance to it, and that's cool. So I guess I'm good.
I'm with you. I mean, I think one thing I've noticed, and I'm sure you notice the same thing, is I'll hear a record from the 70s or the 80s that I dismissed at the time. I'll give you a very good example of this. I'll hear an Andy Gibbs song, maybe I Just Want to Hear Everything.
Yep.
And I hear that now, and those are real musicians. And
that's right.
And they're playing great, and he's singing great. And then I hear, you know, I hear the stuff you're talking about, you know, commercial stuff now, and I'm like, that doesn't even sound like a person.
It isn't. I mean, it's all right. overdubbed.
Yeah.
Tune. Well, so, yeah. Finally, I just want to mention, we're almost completely out of time. We are out of time. That you did do a music video for Elvis Costello, and people need to go to your website. Now, first of all, the album we've been talking about is named
Cartoon Babylon.
And it's available. Give your website.
So danielcarlson.com. You can find the links there. I'm also on Bandcamp under my name, so you can find that all there.
Great. We'll have to talk again much sooner, and hopefully we won't have another event like the plague that just occurred. My guest tonight has been musician and filmmaker Daniel Carlson. It's always
a
pleasure.
Thank you so much, Mark.
Oh, no problem. And you're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. Good night.